Comes up twice.
Whatever the moment brings to you. Yeah. But thank you, Jillian.
Sounds good.
You're up.
Okay. Yeah. Ariella.
Ariella.
Yeah.
Ariella.
Ariella.
Okay, I have a daughter. A granddaughter.
Ariella?
Ariel.
Yeah. Then that's where I got that. Oh, nice. Yeah, that's a real pretty name. She's been a big part of my journey. I'm Julian Visoso. I'm an alcoholic. And I'm really grateful to be here. I'm really grateful for Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, especially on the emotional side, you know. I thought this was just not about drinking when I got to AA, and, you know, I didn't know, I read these daily readings from this Touchstone app about, like, it's an app, and it talks about healing, you know, and, you know, I didn't know that I had to heal. You know, I didn't know that there was healing that needed to be done. I thought as long as I stopped drinking alcohol, everything was going to get better. But I tried doing a whole bunch of various things before I got to the point where I started looking at my drinking. You know, I mean, even just like my daughter, you know, I don't really take her to too many meetings now today because she gets a little restless and irritable. Because I talk after meetings with people, and she's like, she just wants to go home. But I used to just take her everywhere with me, and she's seven now, and I think when she was about two and a half years old, you know, in my sobriety, you know, it was we started off in a halfway house, you know, and we both come, you know, a long way together, and you know, I'll talk a little bit about that. But I was born in Napa, and, you know, I really like how the book kind of, I'm always going to refer to the book because when I started reading the book, it started telling me who I was. And cause I didn't really know who I was when I got here. I kind of had all these masks of who I thought I was. And, I appreciate the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous because it doesn't, I like how in the beginning it doesn't talk about how Bill's circumstances, like on his life or the way he was raised, made him an alcoholic. It talks a lot about the feelings, the way he drank, the way he thought, you know, and that really set the hook for me. You know, I guess I could start by, you know, none of my past or like none of that exterior stuff got me to be an alcoholic. I believe that today, you know. Because for the longest time, I thought that my circumstances or the way that I was raised or my dad being a dope fiend or, you know, feeling abandoned by my mother made me an alcoholic, you know. And I've been feeling emotional this last year, you know, and I'm still unable to cry, but it's always like at that breaking point where like I almost shed a tear, but it just doesn't come out. And hopefully one day in my sobriety, I can really truly let it out. I'm really grateful for emotions today. But you know, I thought those circumstances made me who I was, you know, because I didn't like who I was, so I had to blame somebody, right? Why not blame my parents? You know, why not blame the area I lived in or my circumstances? Or I thought I'd been given the wrong hand. You know, I didn't get the winning hand, you know. And so, you know, I was about like 12, 13 years old. I'm not really sure. But before that, I was about 10 years old. And I remember rolling up sage and I remember smoking that stuff. You know, it didn't do nothing to me. But man, looking back on that, man, I was having a rough day for a 10-year-old, you know. I was restless, man. You know, I was restless. I just, not comfortable in my skin, awkward, you know. And that feeling, you know, that feeling of emptiness. And that was before I touched the drink, you know. I touched the drink at about 13, 14 years old, a couple years later. And, you know, I don't remember my first drink. A lot of people do. I don't. They talk about it in the meetings. But I just remember, I remember drinking, and then I remember consequences. Because I, obviously I'm drunk, you know. Obviously my mother's ideal wasn't to be drunk on a school day afternoon, you know, at 14 years old, 13 years old, I don't even remember. But, and I've always been a blackout drinker. I never cared to enjoy it. I like the feeling it gave me. I like what it gave me. And I relate to like this, that guy Chuck C, I always listened to him, that he was looking for something in the bottle, you know. He's always looking for something in the bottle. And I found it, you know. I found it. And it felt great, you know. And just that you know, that little space of time, that it's like those little 10 minutes when I just feel free, you know. And it's like all these other little hors d'oeuvres, I call them, you know. I used to drink and do all this little side stuff to just get that crossfadedness. I'm like, and it was like that one window where nothing mattered. Like, that was heaven for me, you know? And then came oblivion, like Bill talks about, you know? You know, I have a lot of outside issues, you know, before I came to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, you know? I thought I was a tough guy. I wanted to be a tough guy. And, you know, even my dad's circumstance, you know, he got into his disease, you know, he started doing methamphetamine and started robbing, stealing, dealing, and all that kind of stuff, you know? And he just kind of showed me the way as well. And, you know, it didn't take long, you know, from like age of 14 to 18, I was institutionalized. And, there was a time when I was in, and you know, I was hanging around a tough crowd, you know, before I used to really get into depth when I first got to AA about like my whole gangbang and stuff and all that. But, you know, I realized today, doing H&I, that takes away from my message, you know, I talk really brief about that street outside issues, you know. I remember doing like a year and a half in boot camp before I was 18. And, you know, I was abstinent from alcohol. Abstinence, yeah. I learned a little vocabulary here as well. You know. Yeah. I'm really grateful for that, you know. It serves me today with the way I communicate with people, the way I carry myself at work, my personal relationships, you know. I know how to transmit the way I feel today, you know. I could not do that before, you know. It was always anger, rage, frustration, you know. And words are powerful, you know? So I tend to pause a lot. So that time when I was institutionalized, you know, I found a camaraderie of young men, and I got in trouble in there as well. At my 18th birthday, they let me out. I paroled, and my dad lived in Stockton. And there I followed, you know. My father was my hero regardless of anything, you know. I always wanted to make that man proud, you know. You know, from the ages of 18 to, I would say, about 26 years old, that 26, 27, somewhere around there. From those ages, I drank with no restriction. It's like I arrived, you know. I remember walking out onto the strip. My dad lived off the strip in Stockton, California. And he lived off this strip called Wilson Way. And that's it's a hell of a neighborhood. You know, it's a hell of a neighborhood. And, you know, I'm too fearful to choose another way or to try to go to school or just try to hold down a job. So I just do what those guys in those neighborhoods are doing because I'm too scared to try something else. You know, fear drove me. You know, I wanted to be accepted. And so I did what those street guys did, and I lived like that for a long time. And, you know, I think I was... And during that time, you know, I had a son at 20 years old, and I remember I was getting in a lot of trouble, and I remember I used to pour alcohol over everything, you know. It just gave me comfort, you know. I don't know if anyone can relate to this, but I remember with not being happy with my life at such a young age of 20 years old and drinking to oblivion and waking up in the morning and just taking a hard pull from that bottle and just letting that burn at the bottom of your gut and just rolling over and passing out again. You know, I don't know if anyone can relate to that, but you know, I didn't even want to get up and look in the mirror, you know, and that was at that age, you know, and I just grabbed rage and hit the curb running, you know, and I started, you know, I just started ruining people's, I was not a fun time to be around. You know, I was young, angry, and drunk. My daughter's young. At least she's not saying, "I'm thirsty" in the middle of a meeting. You know, she's giving me a lot of stuff, man, in meetings. She like, we would just be eating, like we just ate before the meeting. And if she's feeling like not wanting to be here, she'll just be like, "I'm thirsty, I'm hungry." And I was just like, oh, man, you know, like. That's that patience, you know, that I learned. And, you know, it's harder to lash out when I'm in a room full of AA, you know, I'll tell you that. I think she knows that, you know. Because at home, I'd be like, cut the crap, you know. And that's real, you know. That's the real deal, you know. I can be short with her, too, you know. I'm mommy and pappy, you know, and I'm really grateful for that opportunity. So, you know, I got into these issues, man, and you know, they almost took, I was in a situation where they almost took my son's mom was pregnant, and you know, they almost took her and my son's life, you know, they were shooting at my house, and I didn't know how to process that, you know, and I thought my actions that I did the day prior had nothing to do with when I was drunk, I got into some altercations, and I thought alcohol had nothing to do with that. I just thought that it's their fault. How dare they? And that drove me for like the next 6 years of chaos. And I hit a point around 26, 27 years old when I was not happy with my life. I was not advancing. Money came and went. Right, like I was able to touch things. I was able to financially gain, but I could never retain it. It just slipped through my hands. You know, I could never retain it, and I was always in debt. And I would get this money, and then I would lose it. And it's just like that merry-go-round. You know, that Bill talks about, that emotional merry-go-round. You know, that was like my life, and I didn't know I had emotions. And at 27 years old, I was like, man, I'm tired of living this way, you know. And I thought that street stuff was the problem. I really truly believed, you know, if I walk away from this life, if I changed where I lived, and I did all these things, and during this time, I lived in Modesto, I lived in Stockton, I lived in Richmond, man, and it's like city to city to city, and it was everyone's fault, you know. It was everyone's fault. And I just kept, man, stepping on the toes of my fellows. And, man, I tell you, they retaliated. You know, they were not happy with me, man. I was not a loyal gang member, I'll tell you that. You know, I was dirty, man. I was greedy. I was shiesty. And, you know, I read the book, Selfish and Self-Centered. Man, you put a selfish, self-centered gang member, man, it's not good for their business, you know. And I was a crook, man. I was a crook. I was a con artist, you know. I was inconsiderate, you know. And not even with that group of people, I wasn't considered to the community, you know. I got to look at how I affected the community with my actions. I got to look at how I can be, my sponsor talks about being a citizen, you know. Today I know I'm a citizen, you know. I try to give back where I can, you know. And, you know, so at that age, I thought it was a lifestyle, you know. And it went hand in hand with me, right. But it was really hard because it's like, you know, I was talking about the masks earlier, like those face masks, you know. So it's like one of them was like I was this persona with this group of people. And then the other one was like, you know, the financial side. And then the other one was, you know, the tough guy. Then the other one was like the macho guy. And then I was just started losing track. And then once I came to AA, man, all that was gone. You know, and I haven't even hit AA yet. But I was willing to walk away from all these masks thinking that was the problem. And so I left that. And I ended up coming back up north. And I lived in a lot of dangerous neighborhoods, but I didn't know the most dangerous neighborhood was in my mind. You know? And the way I was living did not, it was not a product of why my life was in shambles. You know? And I still drank for like another 3 years. The drinking got worse because now I started to isolate because I no longer had a camaraderie. You know? There's a part of my soul that needs fellowship, you know, not all of it, you know, but part of my soul needs fellowship. I need to connect with an alcoholic, because that's how this thing started, Bill and Bob. So I stayed sober. I came to Alcoholics Anonymous in 2018, and I stayed sober for about a year, and I got some gifts, and I decided to drink again. And I had my daughter at the time, and it was the most, you know, I appreciate when people come to AA and don't drink and stay sober. I really appreciate it, you know. And I believe everyone carries a message for somebody, you know. But my thing was, especially people that come in at AA when they're a little younger, I know that pain, you know. I went through so much pain that I needed to get here as soon as possible. I qualified at age 14. So I drank again, and I lasted about a month. And I was like, it's either my daughter or the bottle. And I always, every time I talk about this, it reminds me of the ABCs and how it works. No human power could relieve me of my alcoholism. No little human power. You know, my daughter cannot keep me sober. Cannot. I had to get sober for myself. So my last drink was April 23rd of 2020, and it was the very beginning of the pandemic. And you know what, man? I met my sponsor in his garage, and I talked about what I didn't want to talk about, and I started to do the work. And there was a lot of work to be done, especially in the pandemic. You can't go out. It's just me, my thoughts, and God, you know? I used to always say a power greater than myself, you know, because I didn't want to shy away from, you know, get the newcomer uncomfortable. But today I know, man, if you're new and this is the last stop, God ain't going to keep you out, you know. At least for me, it didn't, you know. I'm just trying. I want relief, man. I want results now, you know. I was a con artist, you know. I was the thief, you know. And what do those two things have in common? They're trying to swindle their way to get what they want. And I wanted just to stop drinking, you know? So I started doing the work, and where am I at? You're good. And life started getting life started getting better, you know. And my mom got sick, you know. She had brain cancer. And, you know, I got to walk my mom through that. And I remember in her last few weeks, she's just telling me that she's just so happy that she never has to worry about me again. And that she knows that finally I'm starting to become the man she always knew that I could be. And I can't buy that, you know. I can't buy that. And she died. I was about 7 months sober, you know. You would think I would drink over that, but I logged on a meeting. I talked about it and took the power out of it, you know. And then members of Alcoholics Anonymous reached out, and then we talked about it, and they talked about how they looked back and they were so grateful they were there. And today I can tell you I'm so grateful I was there. It no longer hurts my heart, you know. My mom's in a better place now, you know. I got to be of service to my mother. You know, I've lived in I moved around a little bit in my sobriety, you know. Ronner Park, Daly City, I lived in the city. Came back, ended up coming back out here to Napa recently, about a year and a half ago. And, you know, during that time, I've been able to be present for my sister. My sister added me to, like, her emergency contacts, you know. Those are the kinds of things that really get me there, you know. And I just don't know how that happened, you know. Like, I'm just, you know, I can say all these things, you know, but all I can really tell you are quote the literature and all these things, but a lot of you probably know it. And if you don't know it, you're probably reading it or you'll probably hear it, you know. But, like, for new people, you know, I know this is a recording too, but, like, for new people, like, I always talk about some of the positive things and how my family around me came together, because I think when you're brand new, you want to see an end game, you know. And, you know, it's a simple program, but it's not easy. You know, I've struggled a lot with anger and rage and selfishness and sobriety, you know. I thought I was well at 1 year. And then I was like, man, I'm sick. Then I thought I was well at 2 years. And then, like, at 2.5, like, man, I'm a little sick, you know. And now, waking up today, now in my sobriety today, I'm sick every day. And I wake up in the morning, and I just get up, and I say, man, help me. You know, if there's anything I can say, I'm truly grateful for a connection with a power greater than myself. You know, that's the truth, you know. That's the truth. That gives me that ease and comfort. You know, that ease and comfort, that direction. But before, like, that, but, you know, before I even got that connection, I had to work the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. There's no way. You know, after hitting, like, all those 9-step amends and you know, I don't know if it was between helping others and doing the 9-step, but somewhere around there, because I started sponsoring guys around 5 months of sobriety, that I don't know where the magic happened, but the magic happened. You know, the magic happened. And, and I think the more I do this thing, the more grateful I get, the more emotional I get. I'm really grateful for sponsorship, you know, because without it, I would not be here. I'm really grateful for everyone that came before me, because I would not be here. I'm grateful for the traditions, because I would not be here. And I remember using the traditions almost like a weapon. I used to be a little crybaby, you know? So like, they're not practicing the traditions. And then I realized, man, the traditions are for me to practice, you know? I'm not the tradition police, you know? And all I can do is just try to set an example. You know, my AA program was starting to get complacent. I started getting feeling complacent at about 5-4 years sober, and I started to feel a little complacent, you know, just doing the meetings, work, all those kind of things, and I started to feel like, you know, not really growing, man. And then this lady in AA said, "Hey, can you help me at the rehab? Can you come speak for me one day?" I said, "Yeah, sure." You know, got clearance, went to a rehab, and then I think it went to some other terms. You know, "Hey, do you want to help me out?" And I'm just like, "Oh man," I was like, "'cause I'm busy, you know, I'm busy. I was working 6 days a week. I was sponsoring two guys. I was meeting my sponsor, you know, and I was doing all this and raising my daughter. And I was like, you know what? Yeah, count me in, right? Count me in. I don't want to die, right? I don't want to die, you know? And so I started doing that. And then she said, "Do you just want to take over as coordinator?" I was like, oh, man. I was like, all right. And, you know, so I started doing that. And then I've been going in there every Sunday. I'm going there today, you know. And, man, I tell you, I catch a buzz in there. I catch a sobriety buzz, right? Like I'm, even as I'm sharing now, I was just kind of getting just mellow. But, like, just talking about H&I and the rehab, it gets me worked up right now, you know. It gets me, like, whew, man, I love AA, you know. Like, man, I feel high when I leave that treatment center. I feel so high. I feel purpose. I feel purpose so much, you know. And it makes me really grateful to be sober, you know. And, you know, I thought that was the end of it, you know. And then all of a sudden, one of the guys was like, "Do you want to put an application for the county jail?" And I'm like, "Oh, man, I don't know, you know. I don't know about that one, you know." And I'm like, "Wow, what if my name goes down some, you know, and I get whacked, you know? Like, I'm crazy, you know? I'm tripping." And that's where my mind goes, right? Selfish and self-centered. But you know what, man? God's going to put me where I'm supposed to be. God, I need, when I breathe, it's like, all right, this is where my feet are, you know? And like, man, it ain't my plan, right? So I fill out the form. They're like, "Oh, well, you have to have 5 years of sobriety." But fill it out anyways. I said, all right. I fill it out. And I fill this out before the rehab, by the way. And I was like, I'm not going to clear. And I think like a few months into doing the treatment center, they're like, "Hey, man, we got your badge." They're like, "Hey, go do your life scan. Go do the badge." And I was like, oh, man. All right. You know, like, I was getting nervous, you know. I was like, man, I ain't never been to jail and, like, left the same day, you know. And so I go in, and then it feels really uncomfortable, you know, because not a lot of guys my age with my background with neck tattoos and you know, my previous affiliations really don't go in the county jail, right? They don't. You know, and they told me, you know, even the guys in H&I, they're like, "Man, you got a powerful message, man. You need to go in there. Not a lot of people look like you. Not a lot of people as young as you. You'd be really useful too for Alcoholics Anonymous." I said, all right. So I go in there, man, and I'm nervous, man. And some of these guys, you know, chip on their shoulders, you know, and all this thing. And you know, so I'm in the jail and I just show up. And it's not like a regular AA meeting. I just sit down there on a table and just hang out. And if they walk up, I just start talking about the book. Just 12-stepping. And I do that Mondays, you know. And over the course of the last 2 months, You know, 2-3 months. I don't even know anymore because it doesn't matter. I just show up. I've been showing up, man, and something really, really precious to me that I can't forget that. I don't even know who said it, but I remember sitting down and talking to some guys, and it's on a unit where they have bunk beds, right? So it's like they're not locked down. I'm just sitting on a unit on a table, right? And excuse my language. I learned how to cuss less and doing H&I. You know, apparently you can't cuss. So H&I has also improved my vocabulary as well. I've had to learn how to use different words to express myself other than motherfucker, you know? all right. All right, Julian, snap out of it. All right. So I was on the unit, man, sitting down, and I was talking to a guy, and I don't know who said it, man, but that guy has no idea what kind of gift he gave me. One of the guys was walking by, and he said, "Hey, shut the fuck up, program's here." And I was like, whoa, man, you know? Like, wow, you know? And then I was just sitting down and reading with this guy, man, and, you know, some of those guys are too cool to walk up to the table, you know? They're cool. They're too cool to get a message of recovery. Right. And I've been noticing, right, because I have the peripherals, right, because I was, well, you know, a little bit in the streets, a little bit of dibble dabbling, you know, and that part of me is still in there a little bit. Right. And like, I'm still looking, man. I always see the same three guys just sitting on their bunk, man, their ears perked up. And one of them always kind of just side eyeing. Right. They're hearing the message. You know, I don't know if they ever make it to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, but I know they hear a message. You know, I don't hear a message, you know, and I always, you know, this Danny Trejo guy, he was speaking one time, and he talks about, you're going to hear the AA curse. And I was like, oh, they're hearing the AA curse right now, because I'm talking, recovery. And it's like, if you don't do Alcoholics Anonymous, you're going to die. You're going to go to jail or go insane. Right. And I was telling one of the guys at the table, I was like, yeah, I heard it from this guy, Danny, and he heard it from another guy. And that guy probably heard it from another guy. You know, that's just how this thing works. We just keep passing this thing along, you know. And so if you're here, you're either going to die, go to jail, or go insane if you don't do the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And then some guy hearing me on this recording is probably going to use it. You know, that's the beautiful thing about it, you know. And it wasn't mine, you know. None of this is mine. Anything positive I have to say today is a product of Alcoholics Anonymous. Two last things that I wanted to touch on that is extremely important in my sobriety. I started sponsoring. Well, I'm sponsoring another street guy currently right now, prison guy. And for some reason, a whole bunch of ex-hustlers and ex-gangbangers always want me to sponsor them. Can you imagine that? You know? I don't know. What's up with that? You know? So, man, I'm grateful, man, because they are me. They're me. You know? And there's this guy, man, that I sponsored him. And, you know, back when I was drinking and using, man, I was out in Modesto, and I pulled a 12-gauge shotgun at him. And this was about like nine years. I don't know how long it was, like 8-9 years ago. And I pulled a 12 gauge out on him. And, you know, he was on that amends list, a never ever, right? Like, I'm not going to go find this guy. Hey, man, sorry I pulled a gun out on you. You know, I'm sober now. We cool? You know, that I don't think that would have gone well, you know. But I ran into him, and that's when I knew. I ran into him, and I said, hey, man, you know, I pulled a gun on you, you know, X amount of years ago. You know, I was drinking and drugging and living a different way. I don't live that way anymore. Is there any way I can make this right? And he said, yeah, can you help me stay sober? And we started working the 12 steps. And he's so important to me because I've shared a lot of things with him, and I relate to so much on that guilt and shame of leaving a life that is all I knew. and having faith in Alcoholics Anonymous that it would be a better life. And I can tell you today, I love this life. And I can tell you, I love God, I love AA, and I have the ability to be kind to people today. And he's coming down today. I'm going into the treatment center today, and he's fresh in my mind because I was on the phone with him, and he's bringing two guys with him. He's bringing one guy with him, you know. He's a year sober, and I'm really proud of him, you know. I'm really grateful. They told me proud is an ego word, you know. I guess it is. I'm really grateful that he's sober. I'm really grateful that he can pass it along. You know, I hope he never pulled a gun out on it. Well, you know, that's between me and him. You know, that's the whole thing in AA. You know, I always tell new guys, I'm like, I know what the deal is. He's all like, you want to talk to someone that'll keep their mouth shut. That's what it was for me, you know. And my daughter's headphones are off. She's giving me that look, so I think that's all I got. Thank you for keeping me sober today.
Ziploc baggies, and there's all sorts of ways for you to get it out of here if you want it. And I really want to appreciate everybody for coming today. And I appreciate it. And again, I want to thank you, Julian.